This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi o Whangaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have back on the show for a second time, James. Thanks for coming back.
Well, thank you for having me, Jason.
Now, there was a previous conversation we had, and that was about authentic relationships, because my first introduction to you was at Spirit Fest. You did a workshop on authentic relating, so if you're interested in that, yeah, definitely go back and look that up. But today we're going to be talking about Resolution New Year's Eve Festival, which we both attended and we both presented workshops at. You did your authentic relating one again, and I had heard good feedback about that from my friend. And another one, what was the other one that you did?
The other one was how to make the best decision for true fulfillment. How to make the best decisions for that, true fulfillment.
And that was core values you were speaking
core
to.
Core values.
And getting clarity for people. Yeah, that's right.
So when you understand what your core values are, then you know when, and I through the workshop, we'll narrow it down just to five.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to have core values around your relationships, core values around your personal life, core values around your finances. There's various areas of your life where you're going to have certain values that you hold dear and true. And if you get to a point in your life where you're making decisions and you're kind of thinking, I don't feel so good about that, or chances are you've done something in conflict or out of alignment with one of those core values that you have, you just haven't recognized about yourself yet. And that's what that whole exercise was. So it was about an hour and a half that we kind of went through. But during the coaching sessions, that'll normally take three coaching sessions, you know, because we go really deep and we get to your real why and realize, because it takes a while to realize what you hold dear, because you have so many influences, whether it be your religion, whether it be your family, whether it be your friends. And sometimes those values are not necessarily in alignment with what you really feel, but you've just kind of adopted them.
Yeah, they're not in alignment with who you are. You come into this world being your unique self, but then you get layered with other people's beliefs and ideologies and society's own way of doing things. And so you sort of lose your sense of self, or who you are really and why you're here. So it's about removing all of that, coming back to your true nature, and then creating and building a value system from there, because then that's authentic, right? That's really, these are your values. There's no outside influences.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I got to learn by having a child. I really got fascinated with child psychology, and I thought, how much do you influence your child, and how much do you kind of let them
be
kind of discover their own?
That's a good way of putting it.
Self,
yeah.
You know. And it was a bit of an experiment for me. My daughter's 15 now. Very bright, very, I don't know if this is the right word, but forthright. I mean, she's very confident. She's, I without sounding too biased, I actually find her quite delightful.
Yeah.
She's challenging, but she challenges me. And I find that kind of refreshing, you know, that this little person is now a big person and has their own mind and their own way of thinking of things.
Own agency.
Yeah, own agency, yes. And so what I learned about was that 0 to 6 is so formative on the brain. Now, I don't know, you know, it's like setting up the basic programming system or you know, it's like for a computer. You know, this computer is going to, whatever that might be, and it's formatting it, so to speak.
Yeah. It's the wavelengths of the brain. It's like, I think in those first few years, several years, it's, what is it? Delta and theta, which are the very absorbing. It's all receiving, which is what a kid's meant to do. They're meant to receive.
So with that, I mean, they're wonderful observers. They see absolutely everything. They hear everything. We often think we're talking over them or they won't get it, but they're observing. What we tend to forget is they're terrible interpreters. So with this information, they form beliefs, they form ideas about this information that they've received.
Yeah.
And with no guidance, that information could be quite distorted or skewed. So therefore, I realized, I got to be careful about just letting her kind of form her own views about these things, because it might get misinterpreted and it will become a belief. And for example, you know, if Dad comes home from work one day and he's stressed out and he's grumpy, and she's wanting to show him a picture that she drew, and he's like, yeah, I'll look at it later. And then she's quite insistent and persistent to want to share her thing. And Dad's like, well, I'll get to it, sweetheart. You know, he just keeps putting her off. She's going to observe. And if that happens on a regular basis, she's going to possibly, and quite often they do, take it either I'm not important to Dad, or Dad doesn't think, you know, they'll make some sort of assumption or some sort of, and that will become their belief. And unless you're able to interrupt that pattern, she could become, that could become a value or a belief.
It comes to their narrative, their story.
Their narrative, exactly. And so from that, you know, she might form certain values about how important it is to connect with people or not to connect with people. Or, you know, so that's what I'm saying. So part of, as adults, when we take the time to discover our core values, we may not understand where they really originated from, but with all the influences that we have as a child from that 0 to 6, and then we get even more when we start school, you want to fit in, and even more as a teenager when you're becoming self-conscious and all those things. So all this time, you're kind of developing your values, but you're just not necessarily always aware that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's all, well, a lot of what we do being human is unconscious, kind of on autopilot, and it's easier that way. There's no need to think, which takes energy. There's no need to be confronted with the truth, which can hurt sometimes. So you just, you know, stay in the comfort zone. You don't go to the edge of growth, and which is also painful. And
I think it's been established that 95%, not a psychologist, I've heard this information, and I've never done my own in-depth research to find out if there's anything contradictory to it, but the idea was presented and I think accepted that 95% of our thoughts and our actions and all that are subconscious. We're just doing those almost in autopilot.
And they're the same ones.
Yes, we just repeat, you know, 65,000 thoughts a day, I think they've even said, are on repeat and autopilot. And so we have this very, very narrow window of about 5% that we can interject consciously, intentionally, a new thought or a new routine or a new behavior or a new awareness. And from that, because our brains, there is this thing called neuroplasticity, meaning we can rewire some of our behaviors, but we only got that, we have that 5% window there to do that. So it has to be conscious. We have to do it intentionally.
Yeah.
And that's quite often what coaching and, you know, can help with, is help people to develop that routine of, and you're not going to be able to go in and take out all these behaviors or autopilot things that you do, but instead what we do is we start injecting new ones, new behaviors, new thought patterns, new focuses, and just by, I guess you'd say by attrition or whatever, the old ones will kind of just fade away on their own.
Well, it's like when you're walking through a place that has long grass, you're going from here to there, there's a path, and another person follows that path, and, you know, then their path is formed. But then in order to create a new path, it's, you have to do that whole thing again, and it's, you know, it's a struggle to walk through this long grass, but that's what it takes. Take this new path. Over time, that path becomes easier and open to walk, and then the other path gets grown over, right? Because you're not going down there anymore.
Yeah,
so you're right. It's not about actively choosing, I'm not going to do this. It's consciously choosing, this is how I'm going to be moving forward.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're motivated by, you know, I think you mentioned before, wanting to avoid pain. We're motivated by two factors, either to avoid pain or to seek pleasure. And so that's pretty much what motivates all of our behaviors. And we do spend a lot of time trying to avoid the pain. We spend a lot of effort and energy just trying to avoid pain.
Yeah, I attended a friend's workshop, and my big takeaway from her was that life's about pleasure. Life is about pleasure. And there's a spectrum of pleasure, but you know, there's like neutral, and then there's orgasmic. But like having this awesome conversation with you would be like, if it was a 0 to 10, you know, be at a 1 or 2. It's like, this is nice, this is pleasurable.
Yep.
And it was cool for me to sort of see life in that way. It's like, oh, so this is why, for me, I'm quite mindful and conscious of when I'm eating, because you know, I used to be mindless and just sort of eat fast and drink fast. So I'm a lot more mindful, and my, you know, I take note of all the senses, the smell, the taste, the texture. So I get a lot of pleasure from eating food, regardless of the taste. I'm also exploring that food as well. And yeah, and so with that sort of baseline of seeing life as every moment's an opportunity for pleasure, for me it was quite nice to hear that. It's like, oh yeah. But then we get these moments of pain and suffering, and you can also get, like, if you look at that scale going to the negative, this is where we definitely don't want to be. But I feel like there's moments where we're actually moving toward pleasure, but it's quite uncomfortable, and so we miss out on achieving that next level of pleasure because we're coming up a little bit of discomfort, which is, you know, it's, and that's because we've been trained in our past, maybe as a child, when we hit the spot before, there was something really bad that happened, like trauma.
Yeah, well, and if we associate any sort of pain, it doesn't have to be physical pain, it could even just, even discomfort can be considered a pain,
yeah,
or something that is contradictory, you know, like you want to be accepted, so therefore you don't want to challenge, you know, somebody else's behavior. And that's a pain point, you know, because you don't want to be rejected. So when we're trying to avoid pain, we just have to be aware that there's different levels of what we're going to perceive as pain, and understand that pain is not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's a teaching thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, you know, you have the sense, you know, like if you touch a stove and it hurts.
Yeah.
The idea is you don't leave your hand on the stove. You know, you don't continue to put your hand in the flame, so that pain can teach you. So it's not about necessarily in life. I mean, we want to avoid pain. That's just,
it's built into us.
It's built into us, exactly.
Yeah.
But if we can learn from those painful situations, then the pain doesn't have to be as intense. It doesn't have to be as traumatic, really. I mean, because you learn, okay, well, hold on, there's something to learn from this situation.
Yeah.
This pain is here because...
you know, people define trauma as stuck energy. And for me, processing trauma or integrating it isn't about removing it, denying it, getting rid of it. It's about learning from it.
Mm.
And I believe learning and curiosity is what makes that stuck energy, is what helps move that stuck energy in the body. For me, anyway, like the trauma that I've had that was stuck in me, I went deep and got curious and looked to understand and accept and forgive. And through that learning process of what it was and what it means now and what I want it to mean in the future, through that, the energy moved. So
beautiful.
To me, you're exactly right. Pain can be a teaching tool. It can also, it's a growth tool, like exercise or this path to pleasure, right? On the road to seeking pleasure, there is pain and discomfort, like hunting and gathering and building shelter and all these things. And working can be mentally fatiguing, emotionally fatiguing, being in relationships. All that hard work is because you're wanting to enjoy it, right? And it brings more joy when you get on the other side of that pain.
Yeah. So is that you're talking about that workshop, is that part of what you were discovering from Resolution Festival, is a number of workshops that brought that about, or just personal experiences, or?
There was a theme that I got from Resolutions with the workshops, and I think it was individuality. Yeah. Individuality.
Okay. And what does that individuality mean? Was it? What's your idea behind
that? Well, it's about you've got your own way of seeing the world, your own perspective, and your own way of giving and your own way of receiving. So giving pain, giving pleasure, receiving pain, receiving pleasure. You know, and so what I teach in holistic health is, like, especially when it comes to diet, you got to create an individualized, a personal protocol for this person. But that's not just food. It's also how you do relationships, how, you know, in terms of your career, in terms of your professional life, in terms of, you know, love. Like, one of the questions I like to ask people is, how do you define love? What does love mean to you? Because it's one of those words that can mean a lot of things to different people. So yeah, that was my like, man, people are really different, eh? People are different, and that's awesome, and that's beautiful, and let's celebrate that. But I'm not talking about physical surface level differences. I'm talking about spiritual differences. Like we all come from the same source, but man, the way we express that source, the way we express that divine energy, it's amazing, eh? It's like, but we treat each other almost as if we are the same, and we get surprised. Hey, this person, I said this, and normally people react this way, but this person reacted that way, and I don't like that. Well, that's because that person's different.
Right? Absolutely.
And that's an opportunity to go, whoa, this person acts differently. I should learn more, or maybe I can learn more about this person or this culture or whatever it is that you've confronted and gone, this is new, this is different. You might feel it's scary, but yeah, for me, it's a learning opportunity.
I think what I'm getting from what you're sharing there is, a key that you kind of keep repeating is it's almost like a curiosity. It's like, okay, well, and I think that does lead to growth. You got to be curious about these situations that are unfamiliar or different than what you were expecting, and if you can approach it with like a child's mind or that curiosity, then you can grow. But if you know if you immediately think, oh, well, there's a difference, you know, we're just too different, and you just shut down or you become defensive, then that will definitely stop growth. And I think what we resist persists. I love that little expression. And it'll come around in another way, you know, whether it be conversation, whether it be relationships. Relationships really do tend to bring up a lot of opportunity for growth. In so many ways.
I think that the most painful experience a human being can have is being in a relationship. Not just romantic, intimate. I'm talking about
the way we relate to one another. Absolutely.
And I'm talking about, human to human. That is the most, it can be the most painful, the most sufferable, but my God, the pleasure you can get, the joy you can get.
I remember somebody saying one time to me, you know, like whether it be whatever it is, pain, pleasure, we, as painful as something can be, it can also be just as pleasurable. So they're almost like on a waveform. You know, when you see like a sound, you know, the amplitude, it's the amplitude. Yeah. You know, and so as far down as that trough goes, is also the height of the peak. Yeah. Now, quite often, we find those type of cycles can be very exhausting. They can be very exciting. Mm. You know, so you're getting both of those. And for me personally, I've tried to, you know, I'm using a musician's term here. I've tried to compress those peaks and troughs so they're not as
extreme.
Yeah, not as extreme. And one of those things that they helped me to do that was a Vipassana retreat that I did. And the theory is, or the philosophy is, to be more equanimous, detached from these peaks and troughs. And you do find more of a calmness in there. And then you kind of have more like ebbs and flows as opposed to peaks and troughs.
Yeah, there's people that love those highs, but then when you reach those heights, there's a big fall after that. There's a big drop. And I used to be that way a lot too. You know, I would have like, when I was growing up and teenager, you know, I had some anger issues and I would be happy. And then when something would happen that I didn't like, I'd be really sad and down. I was like, and it's taken me a while to practice, you know. I started this work in my early 30s of meditation and eating properly and just all this other stuff, and I think you've described where I am now, where I'm not overly woohoo, like this is great, this is awesome, but I'm also never ever upset or frustrated or angry. Like I'm never there anymore, and some people might hear that and go, oh, that doesn't sound really nice, you don't get to experience those highs. But I'm like, I think I do experience those highs, I just don't express it so unconsciously. Like I'm sensing into the high, and I'm consciously choosing to feel it throughout my whole entire being. So I'm not losing control and going, woohoo, it's there, it's in me. And I mean, a lot of people get that through ecstatic dance, but they can just let it all out, which is awesome. But for me, I like riding that nice wave versus the nice, you know, that massive high, and then you get that massive low again.
Yep.
I think that's why we have a lot of addictions today, because of that dopamine hit and then...
Yes.
Losing it and wanting to get it again.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and I don't know if that's a maturity thing. I don't know if that's a cultural thing, if it's a spiritual thing, a religious thing, I don't know what it is, but
to me, it comes down to the environment, like what's the culture, what's happening around you. Does the culture value, what are the values of the culture?
Yep.
Are they after those hedonistic highs, or are they more mellow and mindful of how they go about things? Like the Japanese with their tea ceremonies and other ceremonies around the world and indigenous cultures. Like for me, I have a ritual around making coffee with a plunger, you know? I've got this whole timing system and the grinding. I grind the beans using a manual grinder. Mindfulness, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And a lot of that, what you just described there, is those routines and such that you do, that mindful routine that you have, will give you a sense of certainty. And with certainty comes a level of calmness. And that's one of the things we do, you know, when I talked about the authentic relationships, we talk about our six human needs. And certainty is one of those things that people really struggle with, so they try to get that out of a relationship. But the fact of the matter is, just what you just described there, that is a resource in you now that you can use, how you, your routine of doing the coffee or whatever your routine may be, it's going to instill in you some sort of sense of certainty, and with that, a level of calmness that brings those, the rest of your life, you know, you're going to have those peaks and troughs, but you've already established some routines in your day or your activity, whether it be tea ceremonies, with that intention, and you're going to be able to approach so many other situations from a state of calmness. You're going to show up from a place of certainty.
Yeah, this is that's the saying, how you do one thing in life is how you do everything. So whenever you're doing a ritual or a ceremony, whatever it is regarding anything, could be making your bed in the morning, could be, you know, smoking some medicinal plant, whatever you do in that ritual and ceremony, you take with you into life out there. If you're very conscious and mindful with the intent of receiving something from that ritual and ceremony, it stays with you, it lives in you, and you take that with you, which is why I'm not a fan of people taking these drugs and not being conscious and having intent and being mindful of the psychedelics. I'm more talking about the plant medicines. People are taking them willy-nilly without any sort of conscious or intentional thought, and it can hurt some people.
Do you think that those users are looking for something? Are they seeking something? Or is it just truly...
Well, they've probably heard people have awesome experiences, but they don't know the context. Mm. Okay, this person said this, I'm going to try it. Not realizing this person spent 2 days, 2 nights purging and, you know, singing songs and doing all this work beforehand, during and after.
Gotcha.
So they want what they have, which is an awesome thing. Oh, this person changed for the better. I want that. I'll do this. Not realizing there's a whole process.
Hmm. But then, and is that something you teach in your courses? Is that process and how to incorporate plant medicine in your holistic?
Not really. Health? I don't focus on any one thing. I did go quite deep and narrow into like a certain adaptogens and herbs and food. Like I went really deep in it. But then at the end of the day, I stood back and went, there are fundamentals that I believe we're overlooking before we get to those things.
Okay.
So that's what I mainly share. So regardless whether it's a food or a plant medicine or a new exercise routine, I guess what I'm teaching people is self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
How are you being? Who do you want to be? Where do you want to go? So whatever process this process of, you know, learning who you are, you take that with you into other things, like finding out your values and getting a center and a core and a foundation of who you are on this earth. So whatever happens around you, like a storm going on around you, you can keep your center and not get pulled left or right. I guess that's mainly what I share. Indirectly, it's not like this is what I'm teaching directly, but I'm sharing knowledge around holistic health, and hopefully people are getting a sense of who they are with what I'm teaching.
So I didn't get to come to your resolution presentation.
Who were you?
There was, you know, reflecting on the resolution thing, I enjoy the music and the dance as much as anybody, but I really do enjoy those workshops.
Yeah.
So on that occasion, I was actually at the thing where they're talking about building the community around.
Community building.
Yeah. And if we had any questions and stuff, because it is a a community that I'm very interested in.
Oh, that's a great what they've done up there.
Yeah, so unfortunately, they did it the same time that your workshop was on. But since I knew you, I thought, hey, maybe I can pick your brain later.
And I did have this fear, oh, man, is anyone going to show up to mine? And I had a good, you know.
It looked like you had a great turnout.
And I did the workshop. You know, I've done this before for, you know, businesses, and I even did it for a women's group once. And I had good feedback then. But the feedback after what I did at the festival was really... was really touching, you know.
Oh, like, oh,
my goal and intention was, can I, you know, help one person, support them on their way to health and love and balance. And I got feedback, and it kept coming. And the next day, it kept coming, and then, you know, and the email, and I was just, yeah, it was a blessing to share and give, but then to receive was a bit overwhelming, to be honest.
Wow.
But it was a sign to me that, you know, I'm on the right path.
Yep.
And what I'm sharing isn't, you know, you can have these thoughts, man, is this really what people want to hear?
Well, you know, I think that might be another attribute of the Resolution Festival, is it is the end of the year, beginning of a new year. People are making resolutions. People want to make some changes. And I think your workshop would have been quite timely for people that are wanting, you know, to consider, you know, they're curious about better lifestyles, better health, better relationships, because I had a wonderful turnout of mine as well. And people were genuinely...
Seeking
and interested, you know, and that it goes back to that curiosity thing.
Yeah,
you know, they've had some bad relationships. Maybe people have some bad health. You know, it's like, okay, hold on, I need to learn from this, as opposed to just accepting this is the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I try to put across in my workshop, is how to create. You don't just find authentic relationship. You don't just stumble on authentic relationship. You have to create it. It's actually you are an active participant in your authentic relationship, just like you have to be an active participant in what you consume and like what you teach, you know, with your health and well-being and holistically.
I mean, that's why, you know, I was like depressed and in a very dark space for 16 years, and it was because they call it in Zen the beginner's mind. I didn't have that at all. I thought what I had at 15, I'll have this for the rest of my life, and it wasn't until I was like 31 where I, you know, I made a massive change and I moved house. But for those 16 years, I was stuck. There was no curiosity. I mean, it was curiosity in terms of pharmaceuticals, and because that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ignorance on my part, but there was no real sense of wanting to transcend and change, because I didn't know it was possible. And I guess I resisted something, because I didn't really want to know. There was something that I was denying, and like you said, what resists persists. But I had this insight at the festival: resistance is protecting, or protection. So
you're acting out of fear.
Yeah, because I'm protecting myself. But then, when you're protecting something, you don't allow it to grow. There's no growth.
Exactly.
Right? It's like putting a child in a bubble. All right, they'll never get hurt ever again, but they'll never grow either.
I agree. I think we will definitely grow more from a curiosity mind. And coming from a place of love. And I use the acronym now as a love coach: living our best version every day. So as long as we're working towards living our best version every day, that's love. That's what love, that's what my definition of love is now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think if and when we do that, we're doing that for our collective. That's why I say it's not living my best version every day, it's living our. So if each individual is living our best version, it serves all of us. And in doing that, we get to show up for others in our best version, and that helps support them to show up in their best version.
Yeah.
But like you said, if you're trying to protect yourself, then you're not really going to allow much, because you're going to constantly be in that position or that energy of defense, because that's what protecting is kind of doing. Or you go on the aggression and the attack and put somebody else in a defensive thing. So when you're
it's kind of like being in stasis. Yes, there's no pain, but then there's also no pleasure.
Yep. Well, I think you'll still feel the pain, because because fear and pain, they're sad bedfellows, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they kind of coexist.
Yeah.
And one feeds the other.
Well, and you know, some people say love is the opposite of fear. I say curiosity is. So if fear and pain come together, maybe curiosity and pleasure go together.
Sounds reasonable to me, you know. I think that was a wonderful insight that you took away from that.
Protection. Resistance is protection.
It's
defending. That's another word to use. And in life, you need to kind of go on the attack. But not attack, rah, rah, blind, you know, just shouting from the rooftops. It's being mindful. It's like an art to living.
I think, you know, I often will give my my clients the phrase, what else could that mean? So, you know, I think you remember in our first conversation, because I use this as a tool, the four agreements.
Oh, yeah.
You know, about taking something personally and not making, you know, don't take anything personally, don't make any assumptions, no judgment, that type of thing. Seek clarification. Be curious. What else could this mean? And you know, because quite often we'll go into protection or resistance because we have a conclusion in our mind of what this is. You know, I'm under attack. You know, and we will compromise our morals, values, and ethics to meet one of our six human needs. And usually it's the first four that we've discussed before. And it could be certainty. It could be variety. It could be
significance
and connection. You know, we're constantly working to try to keep those in some sort of balance. And if we feel like those are being challenged, you know, on a subconscious level, we can now that you know that's a tool, you can say, okay, hold on, what else could this mean? What emotional need are they trying to meet by this behavior that they're doing? And are they coming from a place of fear or a place of love? And chances are it'll be fear-based. Because it wouldn't be as contentious, you know, or, yeah. You know, something that you're having to question the situation. You know, I mean, if it feels acceptable, we don't tend to really question that too much. That's usually when we feel some sort of resistance that we need to protect or...
Well, I reckon when there's fear, there's a lot of judgment.
Of course.
A lot of judgment.
Yeah. And that can be a lot of self-judgment as well.
Well, yeah, I reckon when you're judging someone, you're really confessing.
I like that. Yeah, yes.
A judgment is a confession.
Yes.
You can only see and say and blame what's going on within.
Man, I love that. A judgment is a confession. Wow, that's good.
But that only happens in that space of fear, right?
Yeah.
In that space of contraction and protection and resistance and defending and denial. Judge. And what judgments to me are really, it's who you are. It's patterns that your nervous system recognizes, right? You've grown up. There's all these patterns that have been happening inside you and around you in your life. And it takes less energy to have to think of a new pattern than to just go, pattern, that's what this means. Dun, 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 dun. Judgment. I'm protected. Whereas if you see something, it looks similar, but it may not be exactly the same. And you stop and pause and then come from a space of curiosity.
What else could it mean?
And it takes energy and work to create a new way of seeing this pattern. It looks exactly like something you saw when you were five, but hang on, I'm not five now. This is not the same situation. What does this pattern now say to me at this age and this point in my life with the values that I want, with the person that I choose to be now? You might see you might get a new perspective on what the same pattern was. It's the same.
Yes, it same looks the same, yeah.
Similar pattern, but now you get to go, oh, this is what it means now. You have the power to do that, but not in that space of fear.
No. Well, that was gold, man. Well done. Well said.
Okay, cool.
I love that. That's a good takeaway for me now.
And another insight I got, we attended a workshop and who was it? I forgot who it was, but she mentioned awakening and enlightenment. And straight away in my head, I'm like, what's the difference? What's the difference? And then I wrote down, awakening is a realization of the truth. So you have this awakening. Ah, there's a truth here that I see for the first time. And you might have many awakenings, seeing many different truths. Enlightenment is living that truth every day. So there's a difference between awakening, seeing a truth, and you might forget it. It might be gone. You may never, ever remember it. But an enlightened person lives that truth that they saw, that they felt, that they sensed and experienced. They live that every
day. They're applying it. Yeah, they're applying it to their life. They're
applying that truth.
That awakened awareness to their life. And I think.
Because you hear, this person's awakened and this person's enlightened. Yeah, this person had an awakening. To me, an awakening is a thing that happens, whereas enlightenment is every day.
Yep.
Right, every day. There's a saying, I forget who wrote it. It's first the ecstasy, then the laundry. You know, it's like you get the high, but you got to get back to everyday living, you know?
That's great.
What's the other one? Chop wood, carry water, get enlightened. chop wood, carry water. It just life keeps going.
That's it.
Just because you know this truth, it doesn't mean, you know, oh, wow, you're better than anything else now. It just means you know a truth and you have a more beautiful perspective, I would say, of the world, but you still got to get on with living.
Yes, and I think you'll be able to, that's part of, you know, when I say how to make decisions for your better fulfillment, I think that's part of what life becomes when you become more enlightened, is life becomes more fulfilling because you are applying these truths. But in order to that, you do have to go through that awakening process in order to even know what those truths are. And that sometimes you'll stumble on those, but for the most part you got to be seeking. You know, many spiritual people have said, you know, seek and you will find. But if you're not even bothering to seek, you think you already know it all, or you're set in your ways or your patterns or your culture, you have to have that element of curiosity. Yeah. And I do believe that we are wired to seek a higher truth, a higher purpose. That's one of, you know, one of our human needs is contribution and growth. Mm. While we spend a lot of time on those first four, those last two are still very fundamental to our human feelings of satisfaction and fulfillment.
We're all seeking beings on this planet, eh? Whether you're a fungus, a plant, or an animal, you're seeking something, usually pleasure and avoiding pain. And for us, it's those six human needs that we're seeking to fulfill. And I guess for me, in those 16 years of being in a dark place, I stopped. Maybe I sought the wrong things. I think it's impossible for us to stop seeking. I just wasn't seeking my stuff. I was seeking parents' stuff, teachers' stuff, friends' stuff. Societies buy this, have this, feel this, right? So we're always seeking, but are we seeking from an authentic place of who we are?
Is it going to be our best version?
Yeah.
Or is it it's
someone
or is
else's?
It, yeah, or someone else's. Or is it a coping mechanism? Or is it, you know, I excuse me, I get to shuttle my my daughter and her friends around, teenage girls. I don't say much. I'm just driving, but I'm listening to these conversations. I'm not, you know, because I'm so quiet, I sometimes think that they don't even pay attention that dad's the one driving and hearing their conversations.
I think teenagers pay attention to adults.
Oh, and it's so fascinating, but it's interesting how I hear some of the advice they give to one another, but from a 15-year-old old perspective, and I think, ooh, that could be dangerous, you know, and I don't say anything. Because ultimately, I mean, if they ask me, what do you think about that? Or if my daughter comes to me and says, Dad, you know, my friend says I should do this or I should do that. What do you think? Well, then I could share my thoughts on the matter. Or sometimes I'll even question, say, you know, regarding that thing, what did you think about the advice that they gave you? You know, because, but like you said before, when you're seeking something, be mindful of the source that you're getting this information from. And, you know, I remember someone, a mentor of mine once saying about people's opinions of what I was doing or how I was doing it. They said, would you either pay money or go to that person seeking their advice? And if the answer is no, then don't worry about their opinion. You know, I thought, oh, okay, fair enough. You know, so people are going to have opinions and they're going to have their ideas of how you should do something. And so you just have to consider the source. Is that a source that I aspire to be more like? If it's not, then you can take it on board as another perspective. But you need to take action that is in alignment with your core values, not theirs, but yours, because we're all part of the same big human spiritual consciousness. But each one of us is having to have our own experience through this lifetime. And there's not one that's better than another or worse. It's just a different experience that's necessary for them. You had to go through what you went through when you were young in that dark place for some reason. And now, whatever that may be, that's your journey. That's your experience. Maybe that's, you know, you might be able to help so many more people now because you can relate. Or whatever it may be. And I'm going to backtrack because I'm curious, what was the turning point for you? What was the thing that you said, no, I'm turning this around? What was that?
I guess it was realizing that there was no one else that cared more about me than me.
So how did you come to that realization? What was it? Was there a, there would have been a key moment or a key...
Well, the moment was I was alone in my house on the floor, self-harming, crying. And when I looked up, it was just me. Yeah, I was blaming others, but there was no one there. Yeah, I'm still... Oh, so it was me. Mm-hmm. There's no one hurting me. Mm-hmm. It's me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I moved out of that three-bedroom place with, and they had all this material stuff. And
so was it like this huge epiphany, poof?
Yeah.
Or did you kind of... Were you building up to that, that realization?
Well, maybe I was building up by getting worse and worse.
Yep.
Still blaming.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was just by some chance, I had an awakening, the truth.
Yep.
And then I lived it by moving out of it and going, realizing I can't stay here because this is just nurturing more of this.
Mm.
And, yeah. But, you know, I had to be open to something. There must have been a spark of curiosity to seek something different. And it was the pain. Like, you know, there's the term rock bottom. So that must have been my rock bottom. And if you feel like you're in that sort of place of pain and things aren't getting better, but you don't see any reason or any way of getting out of it, maybe you haven't hit rock bottom.
Yep.
But once you hit rock bottom, there's the opportunity to...
So at that point, did you seek a source of support or...
Well, once I moved house, moved environment, got rid of 90% of my material possessions, the way I was changed. So it was just that one, that move into a Mongolian family. I was flatting at a Mongolian family's house.
Yep.
So it's a totally different environment. I've only got a small bedroom now. And just that one change, everything changed, like the way how I saw things. And I was starting to get into food and paleo and all this stuff at the same time because I realized what I was doing that I've been doing for the last 16 years wasn't working. Surely there's something else. Don't listen to the doctor. Don't listen to these people. I've been listening to them for the 16 years. Okay, something's got to change. So the curiosity switch. I mean, but I've always been curious. I just went down the wrong path. So we were talking before, make sure you're seeking what, you know, your own authentic way. It's like, what's that saying? You put your ladder up against the wall, you get to the top and you realize it's the wrong wall. Make sure your ladder's on the right wall. So it took me a while to make sure that I was climbing the wall that I consciously wanted to based on the values at the time.
Yeah.
So that's what that was.
And have you done any sort of work in which you have more clarity about your values? Or you
Yeah, so when I did the holistic lifestyle coaching training, that was the first time I came across, know your values. Values, what are those?
Excellent.
And then I started to learn that. Okay, let's get aware of my values. And that's where I learn about know thyself, learn your strengths, your weaknesses, what you like, what you don't like. And they change all the time. So even though I might have done this practice last year, let's do it again now. Do I still like this? Do I still hate this? Do I still want to do that? Do I, you know?
So sometimes awakening might just be education even.
Mm.
It's just truth. You're learning.
Yeah. Well, it's like a finger pointing in a certain direction. Then you got to follow it and see where it takes you, right?
Yeah.
Like when I moved to Raglan 2 years ago, it's been 2 years now, my goal was to last 12 months. I'm there 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? I was just following this pointer. See, there's an opportunity. I took it and I'm still there. Just follow this door that opened, and the only way I'm ever going to know if it's the right door is to go through it.
Yep. Well, see, sometimes same thing with that wall. Sometimes you got to look over that wall and say, "Oh, hold on, this is not my wall."
All the way to the top. Yep. Oh no, wrong.
And that's okay. You know, I think that's one of the things that we have to learn. We have to forgive ourselves for sometimes putting our ladder on the wrong wall. You know, so rather than beat ourselves up about it, go, "Okay, I now know."
Oh, here's the thing. Now I have a lot of gratitude for that person who lasted 16 years.
Mm.
I'm grateful that they didn't give up.
Person being your younger self.
Yeah, my younger self, the self that was, you know, they didn't want to live.
Yep.
For all that time, and yet I'm here because they chose to live.
Yes.
So this is 16 years, this person didn't want to live, and the end of the day they did. So they went against their own sort of whatever they were going through. So because of that person choosing life, I am this person now. And I'm not that same person.
Yeah.
They chose life so that I could live.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
That you actually even see that younger version of yourself as a whole other entity almost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when people talk about past lives and that, I've lived like 4 lives in this lifetime.
Wow, that's cool, man.
Like, I couldn't imagine myself 12 years ago talking about these concepts.
Yep.
And like even understanding them, it's like, what are you going
well, you know,
on
that's about? That's one of the things I do get to touch on in the workshop is that everything in life, if it exists and it's alive, if it's not growing, it's dying.
Yeah.
And if it's not contributing, it's eliminated. I mean, you just watch nature and everything in life. If it's not growing, it's dying. And if it doesn't, if it's not contributing to the system in some way, then it's eliminated by the system.
Yeah.
You know, and we're no different, you know, and relationships, you could say the same thing about relationships. The relationship is either growing or it's dying. And it comes back to accountability and responsibility, you know. Do you want to create authentic relationship? If you do, here's some tools, here's a coach, here's some things. And that's part of your education / enlightenment, but now you have to apply it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to actually feel fulfilled with your relationship, with your career, with your whatever it is that you're doing, then you're going to have to apply these tools. All this information is there, and you have this inner guidance that's pushing you to seek it, and we have this inner mechanism in us that wants us to survive. Thus we have the fight, flight, or freeze. That's all about survival.
But then we also have the other side, which is like rest, relax, calm, connection, and that's all about thriving.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, going to the next level.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that, but until someone becomes aware of that distinction, they might just get caught up in survival mode.
Yeah, I was stuck in there for 16 years.
Yeah, and luckily you did.
But talking about relationships, that my relationship with myself was dying that whole time.
It was it Christ or was some spiritual leader that said you have to die to the in order to be born again type of thing. There was something like that. So whatever this idea that you have about, you know, whatever that story might be, at some point, I guess it's kind of like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly. They have to transform in some way.
Yeah.
You know, you have to let go of these things that.
And they also have to struggle out of that chrysalis.
They do, or else
otherwise their wings
don't fully develop. And that's part of the pain process, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of, you know, our growth, our ability to grow. So it's all almost, you could say, divinely constructed or.
Mm.
I mean, it there seems to be something.
Like, I wouldn't change anything about what happened. At the time, I wanted to, of course, I didn't want it to happen.
Yep.
But now looking back, I'm so glad it did.
Yeah.
And I have nothing but, like I said, compassion and gratefulness for what I've been through.
Yeah. Beautiful. Because,
like you said, now I can share and relate. And
I'm sure it's given you a whole lot more fulfillment in the life that you're living now, just in that understanding and that awareness and applying that understanding and awareness to your life on a regular basis. You can feel much more fulfilled about and enjoy the flavors, enjoy the textures, enjoy, you know, being present. That's it.
So I think that's the big one too. That was another thing from the festival: presence, the power of presence. Yeah,
because most of our overwhelm is that story. When we're stuck in that story, we're not able to be present. We're just on this vicious repeat, and that story just keeps wearing us out.
Yeah, I'd say we're in a society of disconnect of past, future, but not presence.
Yeah,
I think that society's it's in pockets. Like, you know, I'm in a community where there's a lot of present people who are present to what's going on in them and their families, but also have other family and friends that are quite disconnected, living in the past, living in the future, and you know, I'm not judging. I've been there. I was there, and I can see how it can be difficult to see a way out, but presence is that way out.
And I think, you know, going back to the resolution thing, it's nice to actually, I think sometimes you'll gravitate towards, or they'll gravitate towards you. I think you were saying so many people were coming up and hugging you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and people that you may or may not have even known, I don't know. Yeah. But isn't it wonderful when you can have connection with people that are seeking presence, seeking to be present, seeking to be their best versions, and in doing so, bettering all of us, you know, all of us. If we just keep putting forth the intention of living our best version every day, what a beautiful thing. That's love.
And having that in the forefront of your mind. Eh?
Yeah.
But I think that, so to me, this recent one, Resolution's been the best festival I've been to in my life. Maybe the others were just as good, but I was more present in this one.
Yep.
And maybe it's because I had a workshop to deliver, so I was very mindful of that as well.
Yep.
But I think you're right. The reason why I feel like this was better, even though it probably objectively wasn't, I personally was more present.
Yep. And I think that's what's going to happen on a daily basis. People are going to be more or less present. But the more that you're aware of that, then I think, you know, as another acronym for love, letting others voluntarily evolve, you know, then
yeah.
even if there's someone who's not as present, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this wasn't their opportunity.
It's their path.
Yeah. The next one they go to, they might go, oh, there it is. Like a popcorn kernel pop. Now it's finally there. I get it now. I understand. And of course, when it does start popping like that, you get so excited and you think, oh, I've got it all now. And then you realize, nope, there's another level.
Yeah.
There's another level.
It's like when I was experimenting with different diets. This is the diet. Then I try another one. No, this is the diet.
Yep.
I try another one. No, the vegan way. And then I try California. No, this is...
We love the idea of absolutes and whatnot because they give us a sense of certainty.
Certainty, yeah.
And when you come to terms with and accept that everything is growing, and yes, I mean, I drive a car now that I think has got a zero safety star rating, but when I got it, it was a 5.
Okay.
So the technology has grown. Our awareness has grown. You know, the safety features have grown. All these things. And you go, maybe it is time for me to let go of this 20-year-old car.
Maybe it's time for all of us to let go of 20-year-old stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You can't, you know, if it's not growing, it's, you know, it's dying. And that's the thing, you know. So one day we're going to be more present than the next, and that's okay. But realize, and this too shall pass.
I think you've just helped me clarify what my theme for this year is, presence.
Beautiful.
Thanks, James. I think that's all the time we have for.
Oh, thank you, Jason.
That was awesome. Thank you for that. And yeah, is there any last words you want to share?
I wish you and from my heart, send you an abundance of thoughtful presence with gratitude. Thank you.
Aho. Thanks, James. Thank you, James, for that conversation. It was awesome to reflect back on our experiences at Resolution New Year's Eve Festival. If you would like to work with James and get clarity on your relationships, you can email him jamesstillcoaching@gmail.com. If you'd like to work with me and learn how to apply the 7 holistic lifestyle principles that I share and teach, you can look me up at gijason.com. I have one final insight to share. I attended Chloe Palmer's sound healing at the recent Resolution New Year's Eve Festival, and within the first 5 minutes, I began tearing up. These weren't tears of sadness, but tears of joy, of appreciation, of gratitude, and of abundance. Once the tears stopped, I noted down the following insight I received as I continue to be filled with the healing frequencies offered by Chloe. I share this hoping it supports you on your journey in getting to a better place. With love, there is the inevitability of losing it. This is loss. In loss, there is pain. In loss, there is suffering. In loss, there is sadness. The greater the love, the greater the loss. The greater the pain, the greater the suffering, the greater the sadness. Remember this measure. With loss, there is also grief. Grief is not an emotion. Grief is not a destination to get to. Grief is a process, and a very powerful, transformational one it is. You can think of grief as a bridge. With grief, you can move from loss, you can move from pain, you can move from suffering, you can move from sadness, to the other side of these energies. With grief, you can journey through loss and come to a space of gain. With grief, you can journey through pain and come to a space of presence. With grief, you can journey through suffering and come to a space of serenity. With grief, you can journey through sadness and come to a space of gratitude. Love is an energy which is eternal. Grieving transforms the love you lost into a new type of love. Now back to that measure. Can you see the power of love in having loved and being loving? The greater the love, the greater the loss, the greater the pain, the greater the suffering, the greater the sadness. Yes, this is all true. However, this equally means the greater the love, the greater the gain, the greater the presence, the greater the serenity, the greater the gratitude. So do not fear love and losing it. Love consciously with all your heart. Give as much love as you can consciously spare. What you get in return, what you will receive, will be far greater than what you gave. This is the gift of loss. This is the power of grief, a process that allows you to receive more than what you had before. Until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.